You're tuning into the Active Mom Podcast with physical therapist, Dr. Carrie Pagliano, a real mom's guide to all things postpartum return to workouts after baby. If you're a postpartum mom, coach, trainer, or physical therapist looking for answers on how to get back to running, CrossFit, yoga, Pilates, HIIT, you name it, without the fear of pelvic floor issues or doing something wrong, this is the podcast for you. Let's start the show. I wanted to have this episode today because there's some really cool organizations in the last several years doing some really cool stuff for pregnant and postpartum athletes. And Mother is one of those organizations that like slowly started to creep out of the beginning of the pandemic in 2020 and is really just killing it as far as making races and events accessible for pregnant and postpartum moms. And so I reached out to them and they put me in touch with advisor Brennan Grignon, who's actually here in the DC area, which I'm super excited about. So Brennan, thanks for being on the Active Mom Postpartum podcast and tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you're from, and what you do with And Mother.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, Carrie. And I have to give a shout out to Mel Solovar, who's the one who introduced us.
Yes.
Big supporter of And Mother since the beginning. So I am based in the DC area. I grew up in Southern California. I'm the oldest of five. I have four brothers. And so have been a tomboy and just a movement enthusiast my entire life. And I have spent the last 20 years of my professional career working in the nonprofit, for-profit, and government sector. And I spent about the last decade and still do work in the aerospace and defense sector. I was the supply chain lead and the industry engagement lead for the Undersecretary of Defense for a long time. Multiple people serving in that role, but the chief weapons buyer for the Department of Defense. And in 2021, I had become a mom twice over in a very short period of time, and there was a pandemic. And I had done COVID response for the government, and I got to a place where I just decided I needed to take a step back and kind of reassess life, I think, as many of us did. And I also was in the midst of really inconsistent childcare and sick kids all the time. And so in that, I started my own business and was consulting in the aerospace and defense sector and got introduced to Alicia Montano at And Mother. And I started doing research work for her, kind of translating the quantitative data into storytelling aspects around the impact of the organization. And then in July of this past year, so July 2023, she asked me to come on board as operations lead. So I lead the operations for the organization. So everything on the back end that no one sees to get us to races, to get Alicia out and talking about her story and the organization and making the trains run on time.
That's awesome. And for those of you that aren't in the DC area and don't understand, you know, working for government, military, and that sort of thing too, like that's pretty normal for us around here. Like, okay, well, how would you translate that to running a race? I'm like, no. You've got the logistics and the strategy down.
Yeah. I've always sat in all my jobs. Like I started out in the finance sector and I've always sat between the really technical people. So whether they're like the quantitative analysts or the engineers or during COVID, like the medical chief medical officers and the strategic leaders who are making decisions about the massive direction that you're going to move an organization and doing that translation and coming up with a strategy. So yeah, it's been a great experience. I've gotten to learn lots of stuff over my lifetime and it makes a lot of sense to help do the same for an organization that I think is actually doing a lot of good in the world.
Oh my gosh. Yes, absolutely. So tell us a little bit about And Mother for those who don't know what the organization is, how it started, kind of who's involved.
Yeah. So And Mother was started in 2020 by Alicia Montano. Many people know her as the pregnant runner. She was a track and field superstar, world champion, national team member. And she was one of the first professional athletes who came out, actually really the first, who came out and publicly blew the top off of the way that brands treat female athletes who decide to become parents. She published an op-ed in 2019 on the New York Times, which she had a lot of collaborators on that. Kara Goucher was another one. Allison Felix followed up with one about the lack of protections in contract clauses and the way that contracts are written for male-bodied athletes. And they don't allow for protections around female athletes who want to become parents. And then a year later, she realized that there was more work to be done. And so she founded And Mother kind of right at the start of the, not kind of, at the start of the pandemic.
Yes.
So it's taken a little bit for the organization to get its feet underneath it in terms of getting out there and making people aware of it. But in 2022, I would say was our biggest push forward as an organization where we were at the New York City Marathon providing lactation support. We did the Monterey Bay Half Marathon. We started being at more races to provide lactation and in some cases childcare. And then we have a grant program where we give grants to professional athletes to support their needs as parents. And we're starting to hopefully this year have a Black maternal health grant that'll focus on Black identifying women and specifically addressing the disparity between the mortality rate between Black women and non-Black women, which in this country is currently 3 times higher. So the fact that Alicia and I, we both grew up in Southern California, we were both college athletes, different sports, we both have a college degree, and we have completely different experiences in the healthcare sector, specifically because of the color of our skin, is horrendous to me. And that's something we're trying to focus on as well.
Yeah. I mean, you look at just tiny little things, like starting to just have awareness of, you know, mothers who are athletes and that sort of thing, but you pull out and see that big scope of really what we're working with here, which is just not great maternal health, lots of disparity. Like, how do you, I'm going to pick your organizational brain for a second, like, how do you wrap your head around that and start to make changes that you're moving the needle forward? Like, it's a huge issue. And even just some people won't even recognize that those disparities exist.
Yeah, I think all of what you just said is true. I mean, the way I like to see it is like, I help build the scaffolding so Alicia can stand up and make these things known, because she is a known entity. She has an amazing story to tell. She's an amazing storyteller. So my job is to facilitate the organization's ability to support our mission. But it is interesting. Like, we announced that we wanted to do this Black maternal health grant in July. Mm-hmm. And we really haven't had any organizations come forward to say, hey, we would like to fund that for you.
Really?
Yeah, we have. We had one organization. I can't announce anything now, but we had one individual who provided some funding. But, you know, it's just, I mean, it speaks to the inherent bias in business in general.
Yeah.
I think that it is telling when people won't put their money where their mouth is, and they're all over LinkedIn or all over the press or all over various publications talking about how they support female-bodied people and they support mothers and they support Black mothers, and they know that this is an issue. Yep. And then when you have a conversation about like, hey, we have this structure where you could actually make a difference.
Right.
How about some funding? They're like, I don't know. That's not really in our budget this year.
Right. It's like, it's performative. It's not genuine at all, which is disturbing, because these are real life, like, no joke problems, been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Ah, that must be incredibly frustrating.
It's why I exercise.
Love it.
So why I like wine.
Give yourself a couple years. The wine won't matter in the morning.
No, I'm at the age now where it definitely matters.
I'm at the point now where like, it's just not worth it. Like, that's another podcast. Yeah. You guys recently gave some grants to some of the Olympic trial marathon participants, Sarah Sellers, McKenna Myler, Sarah Hall. What do we have? Over 20 moms that ran in the trials and 2 were pregnant.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane.
I know. And it was beautiful. So I do have to give a shout out to one of our amazing partners, Vita Coco. In my mind, is setting the bar for what a partnership looks like between an organization and a nonprofit. They have provided us with funding. We use some of that funding for grants. We also use it for operational support. A lot of people don't understand our team is small but mighty. We are all part-time and putting this all together, and it takes a lot of effort and time to do all the work that we do. And then they also provide goods. So they supported our New York City charity team this past fall, and they sent everybody cases of coconut water. Mm-hmm. My 3-year-old is hooked on coconut water, which I'm really excited about. He loves it. But yeah, so they came to us a week before the trials, and John Tran, who we work with there, said, "Hey, I found some extra money and I want to give it to you guys. Can you guys set up a grant with the trials? Like, can we do something with the moms that are running?" And so, yeah, we just decided to do it. The application was pretty straightforward. You had to say you were a mom, which we validated based on information we know, and top 3 mom runners. And I really love that it, like, I'm a huge fan of Sarah Hall because she's a peer of mine. Like, we're the same age. And so, like, her continued success as a master's runner and just still, like, being in the game. And then you have McKenna Myler, who
I know
10 months post second kid is just blowing it out of the water.
Right. Yep. And how much running she did in pregnancy and all of that. Like, it's such a different space than it was even, you know, 10 years ago. I think I told you I was giving a lecture yesterday to some DPT students, and I pulled a quote from Kara Goucher, where it was kind of going back on her history of, you know, she wasn't getting any support from Nike as soon as they, you know, said she was, you know, as soon as she said she was pregnant. Mm-hmm. She was back training within 2 weeks, doing 100-mile weeks. And then within 6 months, you know, was running Boston with a PR and still not getting support. And that was 2011.
And also, like, having to go in for photo shoots because they wanted to promote their maternity running brand while she's not getting paid.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that you look at that. And I was like, what the hell? Like, that's not that long ago. Like, her son and my son are the same age. And that's why that story really hits for me, is like, this was going on. What we saw was rah, rah, mother runners. And they're being treated, you know, like trash. And, you know, fast forward just a little over 10 years, and we've got far more women running in pregnancy, training through pregnancy, running in postpartum. I mean, Steph Bruce was out there, you know, 4 months postpartum. And she's been great and super, like, transparent about kind of the team that she's working with. And she's got a physio and a trainer and that sort of thing. But, like, I love that we finally have some transparency on kind of what's going on. And then brands like Vita Coco that are stepping up and being like, hey, we're going to put our money where our mouth is. So those grant recipients, like, what support did they get then for receiving that grant?
So they each got $5,000. So $5,000 each, and they can use it for, we try and keep our grants open. But the preponderance of our grants, are used for childcare or, just like support for being a parent and a professional athlete. And I will say, just to go back to your point about, like, Kara's story, and one of the first things that Alicia did when she stood up the organization, which was before my time, I joined in the spring of 2022, was working on model contract language.
Yes.
So Molly Huddles talked a lot about this, how it's the work that Alicia did enabled her to negotiate her contracts with her sponsors. So we have language that can be used by a brand partner so they can incorporate it into all their contracts around pregnancy, postpartum, and parental leave protections. Mm-hmm. And then athletes can also use it so that if it is not in their contracts, they have the language that they can say, I want this to be included, so that there is recognition that the prior standard of, like, requiring an athlete to be in the same performance level that they were before they got pregnant 10 months postpartum is just,
it's not appropriate. Yeah.
It's not appropriate.
Yeah. No, when I saw that, I kind of was digging through the webpage. Cause, you know, at first, you know, a lot of what you hear about Ann Mothers, obviously with the races and having lactation support, which I think that's just huge in and of itself. But as I was starting to dig through to have the actual legal verbiage. And that's putting your money where your mouth is. Like mm-hmm. that's saying it's not just, hey, you know what? You should ask for this in your contracts. You should do this. It's here's the words. Use this because this is what you're going to need to get what you deserve. Like that's no joke kind of stuff. You know, was that kind of your impression part of the original vision here, or it's just one of those tools that were like, hey, these are the things that we need to get out to athletes?
I think it's a part of the original vision and also like continues to be part of our work. So when Alicia founded Ann Mother in May of 2020, as I mentioned, there wasn't a lot to do out publicly, right?
Right.
Everything was shut down. But she knew personally, like, this is the thing I can do right now. This is the thing that I know will help.
Yep.
And I think too, it's interesting. Our entire team is made up of moms and none of us had any of this infrastructure. Like all of us are athletes. We never had lactation support. And it's amazing when we go to races and then we're there and all these women are like, oh my God, I wouldn't be able to be here if you guys weren't here so I could pump before I run the New York City Marathon.
Yep.
And we're like, yeah, we know because we didn't have this. And, but that's why I'm doing this work. Like the reason is that I don't want someone to have to go through the same thing I did. And Alicia didn't want other athletes to have to do what she did. Like athletes who hid their pregnancies, athletes who tried to negotiate contracts, like knowing that they might not be able to meet that, going back into performance training when their bodies and their minds weren't ready.
Yeah.
And so doing that is part of our research work. So we're doing a lot of work with surveys, better understanding the importance of physical fitness with mental health, especially in the pregnancy and postpartum phase. We're working with Carleton University on safe sport. What does safe sport look like for a postpartum athlete? Molly Huddle's been really helpful in that regard with, you know, there's a lot of athletes that go back to training and they feel fine and then they have stress fractures. There's not a lot of data. Like, you know this.
Yes.
What does bone density look like if you are a postpartum athlete who's nursing and then running 100-mile weeks?
Right. Well,
you don't know that.
That's the part that I feel like we're in such, it's like a beautiful renaissance right now out of necessity because, you know, we didn't have any of this information first all along. We didn't have women participating. And then we finally got women at the table to be able to participate, having to hide it and all of that. And then we get, okay, we're here, we accept it, but we still don't have any guidance. And I think there was this assumption across the board that, oh, if you're a pro athlete, you have all these resources at your disposal. And that could not be further from the truth. Like, we're just getting studies now that say, hey, if you're a pro athlete, like, we don't even have guidance that kind of takes you into consideration, like, you know, and the basic stuff where don't lift this much or, you know, don't let your heart rate go this fast. Like it's not even in the same like stratosphere. So what do you do? Like,
well, and I think too, like, obviously you saw my reaction to that. It's just, I talked to my mom a lot about this. So I mentioned I'm one of five. My mom, she was one of five. She had three brothers. She was an active person, but she wasn't an athlete because she couldn't be an athlete. She was a woman born in the 50s.
Yes.
And I think that the other thing too is that I am a product. We are products of the post Title IX world. And
yes,
we have been athletes our whole life and we want to continue to be athletes. And the idea that just because we decide to become mothers means that we can't continue to do this thing that is so fundamentally part of who we are.
Right.
Like the thing that I have been consistently since I was four and started playing t-ball, regardless of where I've lived, regardless of where I've gone to school, who I've dated, what my relationship status is, what job I've had, I have been an athlete.
Yep.
And so you're going to tell me that just because I get pregnant, I'm going to stop moving my body. No, that is a recipe for disaster. And so I think that part of it too, is that we're all fed up. We're like, stop ignoring us. Also, the human race will discontinue if we stop having children. Like that's strong the one point. Thing that people are like, well, why is this important? I'm like, you came out of a mother at some point. Like, you want consumers to buy your shoes. You want people to vote. You want, like, human beings come out of vaginas. Can I say that on a podcast?
You can say whatever the hell you want.
So stop ignoring us. And I think that that's the part is, like, this, our generation, we're like, we are not going to be quiet anymore.
Yeah.
We're going to tell you, as exhausting as it is that all of us who have the greatest mental load are doing all the work.
Yeah.
We're not going to shut up and go away.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel the same way. My mom's a little bit older. She's, how old is my mom now? 76. And again, I think the choice that she had was cheerleading. That was it.
Right.
And, you know, I was always an athlete, middle school and high school, continued to be active through college. Like, it was always something that I did. And I realize now that I took that for granted, understanding now where my mom came from.
Exactly.
But also to the other things that go along with it, you mentioned as far as like energy deficiency, fueling, all that kind of stuff. We watched our moms go through diet culture. Mm-hmm. You know, we're being taught Weight Watchers at 16 with the commercials on TV. So like, that's already screwed up. And that's kind of what happened to me is I got to, you know, in DC area, we're all older moms anyway, finally having kids. And I remember thinking, oh, you know, I want to run right through my pregnancy. Didn't have a way to do that. And really, again, 13 years ago, we didn't have any sort of return to run recommendations or what we should be doing in pregnancy. I'm like, I don't know why I thought that when I didn't have any clear guidance or idea on what to do. We're just like, yeah, just go and see how it works out. And then on the other side of it, you're with all these problems and you're like, okay, well, the options I'm being given, there's like 1,000 miles between what you're asking me to do and what I want to get back to doing. And if I don't get back to doing that, I'm going to lose who I am. So we need to build a bridge and build it fast. But to your point, like the fact that so many more women are active, and you know, this is where I can tow Arlington being like second. No, we were the first. We're the most active city in the country 2 years running or something. I don't know. We'll bring DC into this just for you. We'll go DMV.
The river on my run. I know. Do I count?
Yes, you count. You count too. You guys don't get a vote, but you count. If you didn't understand that joke, then that'll be something.
That's okay. That's
another podcast. Different show. No, but and then we look at our daughters. I mean, my daughter is 10. And even, you know, my son who's 13, and I'm like, they started doing sports at like 3. And if you started at 3, you were behind. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, I think it's so important to look that this has not been that long of a time, but then also you look at the research and we were trying to get researchers, like women at the bench to do the research. And then even to consider women as a different methodology than men. Like there's so many like, red angles flag that we had to come up this from were just like enough.
Right. And so I think enough. That's, yeah, but it's so critical, like the work that you do, the work that Carlton's doing, like the work that, you know, Stanford's doing on Reds. Yep. It's just, again, like we're done being quiet. We are done being dismissed. And I think we all are fired up that we've realized that if no one else is going to do the work, we're going to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, my daughter's 4 and I was really lucky. My parents weren't super aggressive about organized sports. Like my brothers and I did it, but we did lots of sports. We did like, we only could do one sport a season because there was 5 of us. It's kind of insane.
Your
insane.
Poor parents.
Oh my God. My mom, 5 kids in 6 years, no twins.
No.
Yeah. Again, like anyways, she's awesome. But my daughter, like now she wants to ride her bike while I go for a run or, you know, the other night she was like, I have so many wiggles in my body. I can't sit down and read before bed. So I was like, okay, what do you want to do? And she just busted out a bunch of burpees. And then she's like, okay, I'm tired.
I appreciate her.
I want her to know that like, it's good to know your body and know that you like, you need to get out that energy.
Yep.
And whether it's in organized sports, you know that it makes you feel better. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. No, there was, the Super Bowl was last weekend and there was, I think it was like a Dove commercial and they were saying like a certain percentage of girls drop out of organized sports by age 14. And I see it. I mean, you're getting close to it, but I remember in like my daughter was in first grade and it was the first time that she mentioned, like, I think her belly was big because she'd just eaten or something and her friends were making fun of her. And I'm like, oh my God, this starts so soon. And just that awareness and that it just breaks your heart. And like I said, she's 10 now. But what I love about that very similar kind of sentiment to what you're saying is like, she swims twice a week and she'll have nights she comes home. She's like, I don't really feel like going. And she'll be in like a really bad mood. I'm like, you know, you feel better after you go swim. She's like, yeah, you know what? You're right. I'm going to go do that. And it's just a place for her to get that energy out to like, and then she does, she feels so much better afterwards. And I'm glad she's finding that and conscious and aware of it. And again, we're incredibly privileged to have these opportunities to, for her to participate in, you know, safe sports and things like that too. So, but no, it's just, the other thing I wanted to kind of mention as you were talking, especially with the Reds, I feel like there's so many points now that we really used to isolate to certain areas. Like it used to be, oh, just young teenage, you know, athletes. And now we're seeing energy deficiency in postpartum. We're also seeing energy deficiency in perimenopause because we have these two low estrogen states. And I'm like, the more I think we understand about perimenopause and menopause now, it's making me go back and look at postpartum through a completely different lens. I'm like, oh my gosh, these things are just parallel moments, and what we're learning here, we need to go back and make sure that we're, you know, fueling, and we've got, you know, good understanding of hormones. And again, like so much of this stuff we're taught about in middle school, and it's not right. It's not
right. It was based on a study that was done in like 1890, and like we didn't even have the testing mechanisms that we do now about like all the things. I was a biology major in college, so. History of biology. Yeah. And it's just like, yeah. But also I think too, I have an amazing GP and she has been super supportive of me. And we talk a lot about the fact that I'm 41 now. I didn't have my first kid. I was 36. So geriatric, you know.
That's like average. Like my average client in the DC area who's pregnant is like 38. So you're actually super young at 36.
Right. Exactly.
Baby.
I was 37. Anyways. But like she and I have talked about like what it looks like when you are an older woman who is closer to perimenopause than you are anything else. And then you're also having kids. So you're having these hormonal swings as a postpartum and pregnant person while you also are potentially coming up against other hormonal types of, you know. And so just, again, I think the more that we all talk about it, the more research that we do, the more we'll be able to set up the future generations for success.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I feel like that's such a relevant conversation for where we live because, you know, a lot of people that come here and live here are very career oriented, end up having, you know, a lot of geriatric pregnancies, very close to perimenopause, lives are stressful. And we get gaslit a lot and be like, because basically all the symptoms of perimenopause for the most part, except for a few, you could blame on being a really tired mom with a full-time job and a couple of kids at home. Like there's a lot of overlap there. And so they're like, oh no, you're just a tired old mom. Like, no, but yet we still want to be able to go out and get our run in and, you know, do the things that we want to do that make us feel us. So yeah, no, that's, I think such an important conversation.
And also, if anyone out there wants to change the terminology to not be geriatric, because I don't feel geriatric.
You're not.
I know. And then it was like, well, you're elderly. And I was like, and not that either. Would you like to run a mile with me? Because I will kick your bum.
Okay. So let's take that for a second. Let's backtrack a little bit on your story. Like, have you always been a runner or like what was your jam growing up?
So again, I played all sports. I did gymnastics at one point and got selected for team and then was like, you know, in gymnastics, back then it was, you do this full time 6 days a week and you're in fourth grade. And my parents were like, you can't do any other sports. And that didn't appeal to me at all.
Yeah.
And I played soccer. My primary sports in high school were water polo and swimming. I was a water polo player.
Very California.
Yeah. And I had a great experience. My coach, Ricardo Azevedo, he's a former Olympic coach and he was just an amazing, his son and I were best friends and his daughter and I were on the team together. And I really credit that experience with like giving me an appreciation of well-roundedness when it comes mm-hmm. to training. Like we were in high school and doing weight training and, you know, running awesome. And swimming. And then I decided that I didn't want to play sports in college. So I had been recruited for water polo and just decided not to do that. And then ended up walking onto a Division I swim team anyway, because I did a year of college and was like, I miss sports too much.
That's very DC of you.
Yeah. So, so I swam in college. And then when I was in grad school and in my 20s, I got into running. Mm-hmm. As most swimmers do, you like never want to get in a pool again. And I got into marathons and distance running and was really overtraining and underfueling pretty yep. critically and had a lot of stress fractures. And then in my early 30s, I got into triathlon.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. My brother and my, at the time, boyfriend, now husband, like I would go for a run in the morning and then like the next day I would like ride my bike to go for a swim. And they were like, do you know there's a sport that you do those things all at the same time? And I was like, really? I didn't know. I knew nothing. I ran my first marathon for a charity team. I ran Marine Corps and I got to the finish area. I ran for Fisher House and I was the first finisher on our team. And they were like, you did great. You qualified for the Boston Marathon. And I had no idea what that meant. Carrie, I was so.
Oh my God. Dumb. I love that story. You're like, I'm just a badass athlete, but whatever.
I didn't know. I was like, I didn't know. I didn't know anything.
That's like good news, bad news story.
Yeah. I mean, looking back, I was not training the right way, but anyway.
Wait, again, like when was that? Like what year was that?
Oh gosh. I think 07 maybe.
Yeah. We didn't know anything. Like I remember I did Marine Corps in 04 and I remember like, okay, I got to eat something. And I'm like trying to eat a granola bar. I'm like, you can't chew and eat a granola bar. Like we didn't know, like getting a holster to carry your water was like a whole thing.
Cause it
just didn't exist, you know?
Right. You just like printed off the Hal Higdon training. Yes. Pasted it to your wall. And, like,
totally what I did. Totally what I did. No, like we just didn't know. And that's why people go back and like, haha, you didn't know. I'm like, no one knew.
But I was very clueless about the whole thing.
Okay, we'll give you the extra credit there.
Yeah, so anyway, so then I got into triathlon, which for me, the cross training is really like where my sweet spot is. My body really responds well to it. So I did that. And then I got to compete at Worlds for Team USA. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, it was really amazing. And then I got hit by a car while I was riding my bike in 2016.
That's my biggest fear.
It's not fun. I wouldn't recommend it. But to be honest, like this is very personal, but you know, I feel like why not? I'd been dealing with an eating disorder for about 15 years at that point and mm-hmm. almost a little longer than that. And I had just competed in Worlds the summer before and gotten married. And I was like in peak training. It was May. It was Mother's Day, actually. My poor mom got that call from the hospital. I couldn't get out of bed for a week. I couldn't. I had to stop doing everything. And so it really forced me to deal with my eating disorder and my depression. Mm-hmm. Which I had been diagnosed with an eating disorder in college, but it actually was depression, chronic depression. And the eating disorder was an outcome of that. And so for better or worse, that experience helped me deal really with what I was doing in terms of trying to control my intake and also exercising constantly to make up for the fact that my brain just does not create the right chemical balance for what I need to be happy. And so I got on antidepressants, which was a game changer. And I think that, to be honest, if I hadn't had that experience, I would have had a really hard time being a person. and like going through the postpartum period and like just having to give up control of your body.
I hear that story a lot, that even if you've processed, you know, depression or eating disorders or things like that, it comes back to kind of sneak up on you in that postpartum period because of the body image shift, because of the lack of control, because you have these demands on you. And I had a really hard time with my oldest, and I think I was only 34 with him. Just like, this was the first time in my life that like I didn't have control over the situation. Mm-hmm. And I think being an older parent, you've done exactly what you wanted your entire life. And now you have this person that you can't ignore. it's really hard. I think that's where and then if you don't have your management strategies like exercise, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how did you sort of navigate, you know, that part of postpartum for you, especially having two kids so quickly?
Therapy. I had amazing, I mean, I can't.
That's great.
One of the things I tell friends who are, you know, becoming moms is like, if you're not in therapy, start.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I had some pretty significant issues that I needed to deal with and was, you know, working on.
Yeah.
But even if you don't, like, there's just a lot that comes up and you, mm-hmm. no matter how honest people you know are, every experience is different. And and it's just, it's helpful to have someone who's completely objective and not in it with you every day, like your partner is, who can just like, you know, give you a pep talk or like have a come to Jesus moment with you when you need it. Just validate that like what you're feeling is normal and it's okay. And, but yeah, therapy. And then again, like I went on Lexapro, which was a game changer and just continued that throughout. And my GP, who I mentioned earlier, she's also a runner and a mom, and just like, she's wonderful. So
that, I mean, that one point right there, having somebody who supported all of you, I think having people that are informed about what you like to do, I think is so incredibly important, because there's so much ignorance out there about what you should or should not be doing in pregnancy and postpartum. Like, you shouldn't be doing that. You're hurting the baby. Or shouldn't you be spending time with your baby instead of, you know, exercising or things like that? Like, there's so much judgment about people that just aren't informed about that space.
I rode my bike to the Pentagon and back every day. That was like how I got to work, because it also was like a great way to decompress. So it's eight from my house, 8 miles there, 8 miles back.
Mm-hmm.
And I rode until I was 8.5 months pregnant with my daughter.
Oh, I bet you got comments.
Are you worried you're going to fall off? And I was like, the bike? Like, I still know how to ride a bike.
Right. You're like, I didn't lose that.
Oh,
my God.
Yeah. The amount of, you just have to, like, I kept telling myself, they're doing it because they care about you. They want you to be safe. They want you. But also, like, are you kidding me?
I know.
I'm fine.
Yeah. You're like, really, if I was that off balance, I'd probably be aware of that. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I got, don't ride a bike. And then a colleague said, you're making me nervous wearing heels. I was like,
what?
Okay.
Okay.
Because I was wearing, you know, I was walking in the Pentagon, and I am a fast walker, and there's a lot of meetings, and it's a gigantic building. And
yes.
Yeah. He's like, I just have to tell you, it's just making me nervous. It was pretty funny because his wife gave him a rash of crap for that.
Good. Comment. I'm glad.
She's
I'm just impressed. Like, I could not, I was so swollen with my first, like, I couldn't even get my feet into clogs. Like, heels were totally out of the question at that point.
I had that with my second. The first one I was okay.
Oh, that's good. So how quickly were you able to like start to get back to kind of your workout routine? Was that smooth? Was it like, what resources were you able to kind of leverage, and what do you wish you'd had in the rear view?
So in terms of like my pre mom life, I am just now getting back into that. Like,
good for
this
you.
Summer is probably going to be my first summer of, I think I'm going to sign up for a half and maybe a triathlon. I haven't done a tri since before kids. But my kids are 18 months apart. My daughter was 9 months pregnant, and the day that everything shut down, I was at the doctor finding out I was 3 months pregnant with my son.
No.
Yeah. And then I got asked to do COVID response for the government. So I spent the next...
Thank you for your service, by the way.
It was an incredible experience. Like, amazing.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah. 14-hour days, 7 days a week with no childcare.
Especially in the beginning. Oh my God.
And like being pregnant. But yeah, so I've just been training for life.
Right. That's what, like, you haven't had any time. You just need like a nap at this point.
I know. But I will say, like, so Gwen Jorgensen, you know, she was very public about her like the pelvic floor work she was doing and like the resources that she had. So that was really helpful. And I just kind of consumed a lot of information. I'm also fortunate. I have my brother-in-law and his wife are physical therapists.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so, and then one of my brother's wives is a neonatologist, and I just ask a lot of questions. I love to consume information.
Yeah.
I also validate that it's from a trusted source and not,
well, right. Yeah.
Someone who doesn't know what they're talking about.
Yes. Get vetted information for sure. Yeah. Nice PSA for that.
Yeah. And then I have a great physio massage therapist who's just, I found him after my bike accident, when I'd been in PT for like 8 months and was still in a lot of pain. And so he's been tremendously helpful.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I will say that that's the one nice thing being in the DC area is we have a lot of resources here. And with it being so active, you can really find your niche person that really gets what you're trying to do. And I've got some great colleagues kind of in marathon space and triathlon and that sort of thing too. So yeah, we're lucky. We've got good stuff here for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. We're very fortunate.
Yeah. So when are we going to get, was there an Ann Mother at Marine Corps this year? Or that's
no. So we are finding, it's been interesting. So we had a relationship with New York Roadrunners last year where we provided consulting services and on-site support. And this year it's evolving into just consulting services, and they'll execute the services race day. We've had interest from races, but I will say, it's interesting when we explain that it costs money for us to do the work.
Yeah.
A lot of times they're just like, we don't have that in the budget.
Why aren't we budgeting for that, people?
Great question, Carrie. Great question. So we're trying to figure out, like, we have event management partners, you know, people that do the actual execution. Because a lot of times you have a foundation or a local race organization, but they're actually hiring like an event management company to put on the race.
Come and do it. Right.
And we're starting conversations with those organizations to say, like, what does a budget look like? So are we like pricing ourselves out? And this year, like, part of our research effort too is to get more data around the fact that people who don't even need these services want to support these services.
Yes.
And want to participate in races that have lactation support because they believe that moms should have that as part of the infrastructure. So that's our goal for this coming year. And also to move into other sports. So looking into triathlon, cycling, just expanding our efforts.
Yeah, definitely. No, I still think like there's such a big gap still in people just having the awareness that moms are doing these things. And I mean, last year, obviously, you know, track and field and running, like, it was the year of the mom. Let's just put that out there and say it for what it is, and, you know, ultras and that sort of thing. But again, I still think it's just blowing people's minds that moms are doing this. There's still just this, I don't know, aversion to seeing that this is a reality. So I think the more, you know, people can share their stories beyond the moms groups, and I think that's, you know, initially, we want to be surrounded by the people that love us and support us. But I do think that when we step out and say, hey, we're doing these things, there's people that adamantly don't think that, you know, you should be home feeding your baby. You shouldn't be training for this or that. Like, I still think there's kind of a barrier there. So it does seem like you've got your work cut out for you as far as, you know, the awareness. But for the most part, I mean, I feel like the running community is so incredibly supportive. And you know, like you said, if you're not a lactating person, you know somebody who is, and Lord knows, like I remember a mom I had as a client, this was years ago, and she came in, I think it was 2 months postpartum, and she's like, I want to run Boston. And so I always start with the conversation of, have you run a marathon before? Just to be sure. You never know.
Yeah.
And she had run it several times before. She was not going to like do anything other than just show up, but she needed to pump that whole way. And that was one of the things that this was like, you know, 8-10 years ago, talking about how she was going to manage that. Boob management was literally our primary focus, getting her through this race. And then the leakage stuff was secondary, but she did, and it was great. But I remember thinking at the time that it was such a novelty. But I think women have been doing it for far longer than many of us even realize.
And I think too, it's an education. Like we were talking to a potential partner, a race director the other day, and he was male. And I mean, he is a dad. And like the fact that we had over 100 moms who pumped at the start line of the New York City Marathon.
Yes.
So explaining to him like they're, you know, 2 years or less post kid.
Yep.
And many of them are 1 year or less, and they're pumping and then running 26.2 miles. And he's like, but how long does it take him? And I was like, oh, we had plenty of moms who were like under 3:30 or under 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And he literally, his mind was blown.
Like, yes.
And so part of it is, and it's not that he doesn't care. He just, in his lived experience, he can't imagine doing that.
Yep.
And what we're saying is no, people want to do this. This is something that is important. Like I said earlier, this is who they were before they became a mom, and it's who they're going to continue to be.
Yep.
So let's create the infrastructure to help them thrive.
Yeah. Now I feel like there's such a parallel between that. And then, I have a lot of colleagues in the postpartum research arena. And I'm thinking of one in particular, Christina Previtt. She works a lot with, CrossFit athletes. There's been a lot of baby booms over in that too, especially with Tia Toomey. And Annie Thor's daughter. And so one of the things that she's working to lay out research-wise is first establishing this is what we have in the data about women who are pregnant and postpartum. This is what is in current research on what they should and should be doing. And then the next piece that she just put out was, but we actually have women lifting in pregnancy well over 200 pounds on a regular basis, and these are their outcomes, and it's no different than regular ordinary birth outcomes. It's like establishing that it is a known fact that there is a massive gap between people's understanding of what, you know, they think moms are doing and what they're actually doing.
Right.
And I don't know how many times you have to yell that from the rooftops to get people to pay attention, but I always feel like that's going to be a piece of that. You're always going to have somebody that it's like, you know, brand new news to them that this is what we do. Oh, we've been doing it for a while.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. If you, if anybody's listening and they're affiliated with any sort of race structure or things like that, and they are interested in kind of working with you guys or collaborating or figuring out some way to support, moms as far as lactation services or support or childcare support, what's the best way for them to kind of get in touch with you to figure out kind of if this is a possibility, and what's the time frame on that?
Yeah. So you can email me directly. It's Brennan, B-R-E-N-N-A-N at annmother.org. And please, I would love that email. And then in terms of timeline, you know, in an ideal world, it's a 6-month process. Yeah. We have a playbook that Kendra, who's our amazing program manager, has come up with. That's a template for everything from a 5K to a marathon. And we've started to customize it for other types of events, but we know what's needed. It's a day of checklist. It's, you know, it's all the logistics and planning that you need to make sure that you have the infrastructure. And then also, how do you train your volunteers? What do you want to make sure is available that day? And then we provide coaching support. So virtual calls where we talk through with the race director, the head of the medical staff, medical volunteers, we always want to involve them in the conversation. Yeah. And then, you know, day of logistics, whoever's leading that effort. Mm-hmm. And then if people want to have us there in person, we can also show up. And we found that that's a really helpful way to do the first, when any race does it for the first time.
Yep.
Just so we can do the troubleshooting.
Yeah.
And also give you feedback on like what worked, what didn't work. And we can gather quantitative and qualitative information from the participants, from the people who are the users on like, again, what worked and what didn't work, what could go better.
Gotcha. And then on the funding side of things, nonprofit funding, I'm sure is a whole other different podcast in and of itself. Like,
yeah.
Could somebody who's just like a small individual, could they somehow, you know, be like, hey, I want to support Ann Mother versus yes. like, you know, how could somebody do that?
We will take all of the money from anyone, anywhere. Just kidding.
Love it. What's your Venmo now?
Yeah. So yeah, we have a couple ways. So you can go on to annmother.org and you can do an ongoing donation of any amount. It is lovely. I mean, I can't express to you how much every dollar counts. We also have the Ann Mother Athletic Club, which is available to everyone. You don't have to be a mother. You don't have to be a parent. You just have to want to support us. And through our athletic club, that's where when we get charity bibs to races, so the New York City Marathon, we have a team that's running the United Half. We give first right of refusal to our athletic club members, and then we open it up to the public. And we're actually, Kendra, again, who runs our programs, is building out a program. We have a lot of resources. Mel, I mentioned earlier, who's a nutritionist, and Jess Movald, who's a coach for Runner's World, and one of our board members, Sam DeFlo, who is a pelvic floor PT in the Baltimore area. They all got together and were our support team for our charity team for the marathon. So put together training plans, nutrition plans, et cetera. And so we're going to build, our plan is to build off of that and the other research we do with our athletes like Molly Huddle to provide those resources to our athletic club members as well.
That's awesome.
And just be like a virtual cheering team. We're all over the country. Yeah. So just to support everybody who's like supporting us.
Yeah. No, I think the more awareness that we can have and just that these resources exist not only for, you know, the everyday athlete, but then also, like you were saying, all those resources for moms that this is their day job. And sport, they want to perform their job and they need support to be able to do that appropriately. Like, you guys are kind of hitting all the points. So I'm so glad that you were able to come on today and share that information. Also, thank you for sharing a bit about your story too. I think it's so interesting, especially with little but mighty teams in the nonprofit sector here in DC. There's some great stories behind why we do what we do, because I think it makes our work so much more meaningful. So thank you for your vulnerability and kind of sharing that stuff too. So
thank you for having me.
All right. If you want to learn more about Ann Mother, we have their Instagram here. And then Brennan popped up her email. It's Brennan@annmother.org. Thanks so much, Brennan. And hopefully we can catch up here in the DC area and get you ready back for your first half. Which one do you think it's going to be?
So I think I'm going to do the National Women's Half.
Yeah. Okay.
I've never run that one.
Okay.
As you know, Carrie, like the DC races can be so huge.
I know.
So I thought, you know, a smaller size one might be fun.
That sounds good. All right. Well, I'll come cheer you on. Okay.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right. Thanks so much for being on.
Thanks.
Did you enjoy the podcast? If so, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and tell a friend to do the same. Are you a postpartum mom or postpartum pro wanting to know more about getting back to running after baby? Check out all my free goodies on carriepagliano.com. This podcast represents the opinions of Dr. Carrie Pagliano and her guests to the show. The content should not be taken as medical advice and is for entertainment purposes only. Always consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions.